Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelthy providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelthy can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
This is an announcement to all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all. With the struggling economy and the cost of living on the rise, Endurance is now offering an affordable, low-cost vehicle coverage plan to the general public. As of today, you could be one of millions of drivers that now may qualify to have your vehicle protected under this coverage and have all future covered auto repairs paid directly to the repair shop for you. You pick your plan, you pick your deductible, you even pick the repair shop. Roadside service, towing, and rental coverage is included. To all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire, get your vehicle protected now and save your wallet from costly vehicle repairs. For your free 5-minute quote and to see if you qualify, visit endurancewarranty.com. Endurancewarranty.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm on a mission to make sure that everybody in this world knows that that next level is waiting for you. You can become that person you wanted to be when you were 10, 11, and 12. You don't have to let your reality take over and all of a sudden you live this normal life. You don't want to have a normal life. Why have a job and just be normal? Why have a company and just be average? I'm telling you, you should be on a mission to get to that next level. Ladies and gentlemen, you got the job, but that's not enough. Don't relax. Don't settle. You got to get bigger, stronger, and faster. You got to get better. You got to make sure that your work ethic, getting that job is just the beginning. That's not the end. You want to live your dreams. You want to have your goals. You want to get to that next level, ladies and gentlemen. You want to take trips. You want to have a nice house. You want to have a nice car. You want to know powerful people so your kids can have access and their lives can be easier than yours. You are beginning a legacy, and your job is not just take your career to the next level. Your job is to take your family to the next level so your kids are better positioned than you were. So when I go and speak, I'm all about the next level. When I coach executives, I'm all about the next level. You have to master fundamentals. You have to have a good vision. You have to make sure your mindset is right. You have to make sure you understand how to operate in a team. But most importantly, you have to be accountable. We live in a world where people lack accountability. That's why my best-selling book, All But Stink, is so popular. It's how to live your best life and eliminate excuses. Because until any of us own our situation, until we become accountable, we are all crippled by our own excuses that we believe are real. A lot of people get to certain levels based on talent alone. But your next level is not about talent. Your next level is about getting there on purpose. It requires work ethic. Your next level requires you to get the right mindset. Your next level requires you to get connected to the right people. We can all get to the next level, but first we gotta get them out of our own way. I mean, I had excuses, and the excuses are crippling. And most people don't even realize that they are operating in excuses, which means you're operating in a state less than. Why be a C student for the rest of your life when we all will be A students? But it requires certain fundamentals that we must master. The biggest mistake any of us make is getting comfortable. The worst thing you want to do is get comfortable in a place you don't want to be. I mean, you might be making $80,000, but are you comfortable? And you know you should be making $150. You might make $150 and you're comfortable, you should be making $350. You got a little small company, a little small town, but you are comfortable when you really should be a regional player. You really should be operating on a global landscape. The biggest mistake that we can make, lately, is getting comfortable in a place you don't want to be.
So were you teaching yourself and reading books then for the most of those years, or did you have someone else in there teaching you? Was it all self-taught?
Everything was self-taught in prison. Nobody was really on it. Like, everybody was like on sports. Real estate was the thing. Like, everybody in prison wants to come home and get into real estate.
Really?
Everybody wants, and that was one of the things that Robert Kiyosaki talks about. Real estate, real estate, real estate, real estate, real estate. So, you know, that's kind of like the thing. Like, I'm gonna come home, I'm getting into real estate. And in prison, I learned about real estate investment trust, which is REITs. I was like, so I can own the real estate without even, you know
managing
what I'm saying?
Managing a property
and none of that. Oh, this is love. So everything was me just learning. So studying Monash Pabrai, studying Warren Buffett, studying Bill Ackman, studying just so many different people, Peter Lynch, just studying them, understanding them, Joel Greenblatt. Just studying them, listening to them, like getting my people, man, send me some books, getting somebody I know, like, yo, man, tell your people, send me these books, I'm gonna pay you for it from the commissary. And so I would just read. I ain't had nothing else to do. I would go to work, come back to my dorm, read, and then I would get consumed in it because immediately I saw that there were two different Americas. That was the America that I knew, and everybody around me had the same problem. There was a particular thread that ran through every hood across America. Every hood that I went to was always the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then we always look at another part of America, and we'd be like, yo, how do they get that? And I was like, the reason why in my mind was because they have access to a different type of information.
Mm-hmm. So is it information or is it an environment?
So it's a combination of both, right? So people like to talk about racism a lot. And while it does exist, I think classism is a completely different animal.
What does that mean?
So classism is, there's a group of people, no matter your color, that has a different information, pedigree, status, and access.
Yeah.
That other people don't have.
Doesn't matter what race or religion or where you're
doesn't
from.
Matter.
So how do people get into that class, even if they don't fit the majority of the class, look like the majority or come from the majority of that class?
So
where it could look like racism.
Yes, so, and that's the thing, like, even though racism exists, but it exists on a bigger picture at a smaller scale. So this is my introduction.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's understanding that classism says, this is how our family is set up. Look, I'm gonna use you for example. Your father says, listen, you need to learn how to invest. You need to learn how to start a business. But also, I want you to meet so-and-so's son. I want you to meet so-and-so's brother. I want you to meet so-and-so's daughter. I want you to go to this school. I want you to go to this party with me. And so information gets passed down. Life insurance get passed down. Wills, trust get passed down. Those type of things help you get access to room that me or these people over here will never see.
I want to be in the room where it happens.
Yeah, you feel me? And so I was like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. The information is what changes everything. Assets are the blood, are the oxygen to this, right? Let me teach you about taxes. Let me teach you the importance of life insurance. Mm-hmm. Let me teach you the importance of this, right? Let me teach you the importance of, you may not like this person. Check this out. You may not like this person, but just because you don't like them don't mean you can't do business with them. Mm. Right? Because they have access to such and such that you don't. So what over here is, if you don't like them, kill them. Mm. You don't like them, you know, have, let them know you don't like them. Right. Let them know there's animosity right there. Because I want it to, like, there's it. The way that the world is viewed is two completely different ways. You feel me? Mm-hmm. And so because of that, this set of people, until they get exposed to it, until this class of people gets exposure, everyone will repeat that cycle.
Yeah.
Whereas this class of people, if you repeat, if you do anything less than what we've done already, like, what is your problem? You know what I'm saying? Why won't you be great? Right? And so once I understood that, I was like, I get it.
You do not have to be able to play three-dimensional chess or be in the top leagues in terms of bridge playing or something of the sort. You need a stable personality. You need a temperament that neither derives great pleasure from being with the crowd or against the crowd. Because this is not a business where you take polls, it's a business where you think. And Ben Graham would say that you're not right or wrong because 1,000 people agree with you. And you're not right or wrong because 1,000 people disagree with you. You're right because your facts and your reasoning are right. Certainly most of the professional investors focus on what the stock is likely to do in the next year or two. And they have all kinds of arcane methods of approaching that. But they do not really think of themselves as owning a piece of a business. The real test of whether you're investing from a value standpoint or not is whether you care whether the stock market is open tomorrow. If you're making a good investment in a security, it shouldn't bother you if they close down the stock market for 5 years. All the ticker tells me is the price. And I can look at the price occasionally to see whether the price is outlandishly cheap or outlandishly high. But prices don't tell me anything about a business. Business figures themselves tell me something about a business, but the price of a stock doesn't tell me anything about a business. I would rather value a stock or a business first and not even know the price, so that I'm not influenced by the price in establishing my valuation, and then look at the price later to see whether it's way out of line with what my value is.
A good business is the one that earns a high rate of return on tangible assets.
Very simple.
That's pretty simple, yeah. And the very best businesses are the ones that earn a high rate of return on tangible assets and grow. But even ones that don't grow, if they earn a high return on tangible assets, and then of course if you don't pay too much, they can be a good investment. They're a good business to start with by the high returns. If you pay too much for them, you can turn a good business into a bad investment. But if you pay an appropriate price, you can do all right. Now, the big mistake which we made in the early years was to try and buy a bad business at a really cheap price. And it took me about 20 or 30 years to figure out that wasn't a good idea. All you have to do is just buy a cross-section of America and then never listen to people like me or read the papers or do anything subsequently. They think that because you can trade, you should trade. You buy a farm, you buy an apartment house, you can't resell it tomorrow. And you know, the cost of moving around are huge. Now you get something handed to you, liquidity, you know, which is instant. You can sell. The cost of doing it are pennies, you know, compared to other kinds of investment activity. So because they can so easily move around, they do move around, and moving around is not smarter than investing.
And you don't have to make any decisions. You have to make, nothing is forced upon you. So there are no called strikes in the business. The pitcher just stands there and throws balls at you, And if you're playing real baseball and it's between the knees and the shoulders, you either swing or you get a strike call on you. If you get too many call on you, you're out. In the securities business, you sit there and they throw U.S. Steel at 25 and they throw General Motors at 68. And you don't have to swing at any of them. They may be wonderful pitches to swing at, but if you don't know enough, you don't have to swing. And you can sit there and watch thousands of pitches, and finally you get one right there where you want it, something that you understand, and then you swing. And
so you might not swing for 6 months.
You might not swing for 2 years.
Isn't that boring?
It would bore most people, and certainly boredom is a problem with most professional money managers. If they try to sit out an inning or two, not only do they get somewhat antsy, but their clients are start yelling, "Swing, you bum!" You know, from the stands, and that's very tough for people to do.
Edgar Orton Smith set out to write a book on bonds versus stocks, and he said he went in with the idea that bonds would be a better investment in times of deflation, and stocks would be a better investment in times of inflation. And the first line of his book was to say that he'd been wrong. But he had enough sense to look at his evidence. I think Darwin said if you found evidence that was contrary to what you already believed, write it down in 30 minutes or your mind will just block it out. I mean, people have a great resistance to new evidence. And he said, if a stock yields 4%, a bond yields 4%, which was what he was talking about then, the stock was going to outperform the bonds because there were retained earnings that were building beyond that yield. And that had been true for a long, long time, but nobody paid any attention to it. We don't get rich on our dividends that we receive, although we're happy to receive them. We get rich on the fact that the retained earnings are used to build new earning power, repurchase shares, which increases your ownership in the company. And Berkshire has retained earnings ever since we started. That's the only reason Berkshire's worth a lot more is we've retained earnings.
But you talk about ownership, and I think that's a word that probably connects to a lot of our viewers. But, you know, they'd also be thinking, how do I do that? Like, how did you have the confidence, the ownership to say, you know, I'm ready to go pitch to the board?
Yeah. You know, I think it comes down to I built a high-performance team as we were getting going, right? And that's the most important job of any CEO. And I really believe that the organization, the company, with the best people wins. And the key is how to get them working together as a team, right? You know, the way I believe in that is you've got to have a North Star, a noble cause. You also need an enemy because, you know, that stops the water cooler talk. Nothing gets the blood stir. You know, in the United States State Department, we call it an adversary, but in business, we call it an enemy. And then the third thing you need is you need a plan. And with all these companies that I had the good fortune to build and these different organizations I ran, we would always have a playbook. And that's basically the vision, the mission, the values, the team rules, long-term goals, strategy, all boiled down to execution. So it really was a way to maintain alignment and a tremendous tool when it comes to scaling. What I found, one of the things that works, is you can't be afraid to be vulnerable. Because when you're vulnerable with somebody, about 95% of the time, they'll reciprocate in kind. And when both sides are vulnerable, that forms a connection. And that is a way that I found all the time. Or also another one is, tell me your story. Everybody loves to tell their story. And I'm just naturally a curious person, so I love hearing. That never bores me. So it's really the power of one-on-one relationships. And, you know, one of the things my dad always said is the key is when the world hands you a sack of sour lemons, the objective of the game is to turn into sweet lemonade. For your vision, and our vision at Ariba was really simple. We said we want to build a great sustaining company into the 21st century because we had just sold Razzle, and we actually kind of wanted to keep it going. They just made us an offer we couldn't refuse. We owed that to the shareholders.
Good problem to have.
Yeah. And then the mission is all about leadership because the object of the game, particularly in Silicon Valley, is to be the category king. Because when you're the category king, you get 80% of the industry resources and 80% of market cap. Players 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, they could fight over the scrap. So our mission was to create a category, called business-to-business electronic commerce, and to be the leader. And then the next thing under that is your values. So, right, integrity's there, courage, high ambition, accountability, respect, the basics. And then we had a set of team rules that kind of personify those values. And by the way, same team rules for all the companies. The first one is direct, open, and honest communication. In a word, the truth. Because I had seen at General Motors, when you go through 15 levels, you know, I started at the lowest of the low, production floor, to the highest of the high, where I was a staff for the board of directors. I could see how that message would change, right? The second one is no ideas, a bad idea. And then we added parentheses, unless the CEOs. So, because it's all about making a safe environment.
Sure, sure.
And you can make a safe environment when you mock out the CEO. Plus, it's fun. The third one is always raise the standard in everything we do, in our people, our processes, and our products. And if somebody can't keep up with that standard, you got to do something about it. Otherwise, you've automatically lowered your standard. Then the fourth one is we're a team first and functional specialist second. So you developers put your feet in the customer's shoes. You sales guys don't make commitments we can't keep. And then the fifth one is the most powerful one of all. And that is hire the best people, especially if they're better than us. And I'll tell you an inflection point at Ariba. You know, every Friday up until we probably got to be about 100 people, we'd go around the room at what we call the round table. Anybody could say anything they want on their mind. Ariba, we had 7 founders, right? And so this one guy stands up, our VP of marketing, one of the founders, Bobby Lynn. And he goes, you know, this opportunity is way bigger than I ever imagined. Ariba's gonna be way more successful than even I can dream of. And he goes, citing team rule number 5, I think we ought to go out and hire a real world-class VP of marketing who's done it before, and I'll focus on partnership. And you can just see jaws dropping. And the guy who came after him, I'll never forget, his name was Guy Haskins. He was about 24 years old. He just goes, Bobby, I just came from a software company. It is gonna go bankrupt any day now. But if one guy would have had the courage to say what you just said right now, we could have taken it to the moon. So from that point on, it became noble to hire the best people, especially better than us.
Is it one person in a business that's responsible? Is it the executive team's responsibility? Is it everyone's responsibility to create that?
Yeah. So it's more efficient when it comes from the top, but it's anyone's responsibility. You know, leadership is a responsibility to people around us. It's not a rank. You've heard me say this before. I know many people who sit at the highest levels of organizations who are not leaders.
Right.
They have authority, and we do as they tell us because they have authority over us, but we would not follow them.
Right.
And I know many people, as do you, who sit at lower levels of organizations who have no formal authority, and that they've made a choice to look after the person to the left of them and look after the person to the right of them, and we would trust them and follow them anywhere. In other words, leadership can come from anywhere within an organization. Yes, we have the right to demand to have better leaders and better leadership in our companies. But when we don't, quitting is not the only option, nor is simply complaining, but undertaking the task of becoming the leader we wish we had.
Wow.
You know, anyone at any level can become a student of leadership, and anyone at any level can choose to take to look after this person and that person and work tirelessly to see that they rise, they become better versions of themselves, and that they show up to work inspired and go home feeling fulfilled and feel safe when they're at work because of us.
Yeah.
And though the organization itself may be dysfunctional, there are pockets, diamonds in the coal mine. And if you get enough of those pockets, the tail can actually wag the dog.
Wow.
So that's the great irony of all of this, which is the power belongs to the people. This is just an anthropological truth.
Sure.
You know, the power always belongs to the people, which is why dictators bus in crowds to give the appearance that they're popular, or they actually have fake elections to give the appearance that they have a mandate. Dictators do that,
wow.
Right? If the people didn't have the power, dictators wouldn't need rallies and they wouldn't need elections.
Right.
Right? Dictators fear the people, right? Because people have the power in any population, in any organization. And what keeps dictators and bad leaders, authorities in power, is by keeping the people divided. Because if you can create mistrust amongst neighbors, then the people can never come together and never depose the leader. And so if you look at any dictatorship that ever existed, there are systems. Look at East Germany during the Cold War. You know, we didn't know who was telling on us. So everybody kept to themselves and nobody trusted anybody. Neighbors didn't trust neighbors. And that allows authoritarian organizations to do as they please. The people, it's when people come together, it's not Congress that just woke up one day and decided the Civil Rights Act, that's a pretty good idea. It was thousands and thousands and thousands of people marching, you know, in peaceful protest that put unbelievable pressure on a system to change. And anything that's ever happened in the world where there's been revolution or evolution happened this way.
Yeah.
People always have the power, and this is very true in the business as well. The people have the power. And so if we have mass layoffs on an annualized basis and you create internal competition, what you're doing is you're pitting people against people, especially if you create a system where we're only incentivized based on individual performance. So in a sales organization, for example, if my income literally depends on how many sales I get and I'm gonna keep stuff away, right. Why would I help you?
Yeah.
Right? Keep the people divided, you keep the system that we've got. Mm-hmm. But as soon as the people come together, good things happen. I'm a great believer that those of us who believe that there's a better way to build a corporate environment, those of us who believe that we're being able to say, I love my job as a right, it's not a privilege, it's not for a lucky few who get to go home at the end of the day and say, I love my job.
Right.
It's not some lottery that you win. You know, you go to a dinner party and you ask somebody, do you like your job? And they go, I love my job. And we go, oh, you're so lucky. They didn't win anything.
Right.
It's not luck.
Right.
We are entitled. It is our God-given right to love going to work.
Why is that?
Because I think human beings are tribal animals, and all of us want to feel inspired. We all want to feel like we're a part of something bigger than ourselves. We all want to have some sort of physical and psychological safety, whether it's at home or work. Mm-hmm. You know, we fear war, we fear crime, and we want to feel psychologically safe at home. We want safety. And at the end of the day, every human being on the planet wants the feeling that I can provide for myself and my family. There's nobility in work. Mm-hmm. You know, handouts don't work, and they destroy the human ego.
Yeah.
You know, there's nobility in being able to do a hard day's worth of work. And collect a paycheck, and when I do really well, somebody says, good job, here's a little extra for you, mm-hmm. because you're a valuable member of the tribe. And we want to make sure that we're incentivizing the behavior that you're doing,
right.
And the behavior you're doing is you're taking care of something bigger than yourself.
And what would happen if you left? What would happen if you stayed? What would happen if you changed? It's up to them to pull themselves out of the victimhood. It's hard to see from a victim standpoint the aspect that everything's a choice. And I move ahead with everything's a choice. Existentialism, that it is a choice. And how you feel about it and what you do about it. Doesn't mean there aren't barriers around you. Doesn't mean the world doesn't want to guide you to a certain endpoint. But you are in the driver's seat of your life. There's power in knowing who you are. There's not much power in being a zombie. And just walking through the world and saying, well, a lot of people do it is they do stuff and they say, I don't think that's it. They do something else. I don't think that's it. Well, what do you think it is? Don't work every vocation in the world, every spot in the world as a null set until you find out what it is. Make a declaration. The leader part is that they're able to bring out those characteristics in others, that consciousness in others. They don't do it by cajoling or by manipulation. That can be done. It can be done for a short term, but it's not a long-term measure. But they actually help people in the discovery, if they're not already awake to who they are, they help them become awake to why they're in this business or organization. And together, that they start to move aggressively towards a vision. That's what differentiates teams, and that's where work spirit comes into play. That spirit of purpose, and it's enunciated, they know what it is, and they speak directly to it. What differentiates the best leader in these systems, or the best leaders? And it has something to do with this spirit, passion, for something they hold deeply and consciously at bay. Who they are and why are they in the world becomes very important to them. Be appreciative that you've learned how to manage yourself. Then move towards leading yourself. And leading yourself is understanding and starting to do the deep inquiry that you'll do for life. Why am I here on earth? For what purpose? And then to establish a vision, probably as a 20-year-old, it's probably 5 years out. Where do I want to be? What do I want to be doing? Being with, learned, knowing, all those areas. And then what values do I want to operate within? So it's really developing that vision, value, and purpose for myself. And then once I have that, then I'd say the last step is start to identify people that I align with on purpose at different levels and start to move with them into the world. Thank you.